Hi, welcome to Extra Time. I'm John Raymond, web editor for sport here at The National. I am joined for a very special edition of Extra Time with Gary Minahan, our reporter at the World Cup, all the way from Sao Paulo, Brazil, joining us via telephone. Thanks for being here, Gary.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit, I guess, about... We're at the quarterfinal stage now. Last night was the last of the round of 16. What do you think of the teams remaining? Who looks like they could win? How do you see just the rest of the tournament playing out?
I think it's an interesting World Cup so far because we have 8 teams left, and the traditional powerhouses, the teams that at the start of the tournament we would have expected to be here, haven't really found top gear yet. Mm-hmm. Brazil were very fortunate to get through their match. Chile, Germany struggled against Algeria, and Argentina yesterday against I was at a game and I've forgotten who they were against.
Switzerland.
There's so many games going on just now, but Argentina struggled against Switzerland. So the three teams you would expect to be there, the three teams you expect to maybe push to reach for the final, have yet to really impress. So it'll be interesting to see if they step up a gear in this next game, or if there's an upset on the cards. Colombia face Brazil. Colombia have looked very good so far.
Yeah.
They're up against Brazil, host country. That's the tied round, no doubt about it. It's going to be a fantastic game up in Fortaleza. It's the one I'm looking forward to the most. And I think the whole country's hoping Brazil wins, but I think if Colombia wins, then there won't be... Colombia are basically playing the way that Brazilians wish Brazil were playing, so... To be interesting.
Now, you've been in Brazil, I want to say, for like a month and a half now, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that, right?
Probably a little bit longer, but yeah, I've been covering World Cup for now for about a month.
Just tell us a little bit, I guess, about the stuff that has stuck out to you while you've been there, you know, the day-to-day grind of covering the World Cup, and just the sights and sounds that have been, I guess, most interesting.
I mean, the overriding feeling is that the World Cup is about fans. It could be anywhere. I mean, people criticize the next two World Cups, the one in Russia, one in Qatar, and they say these are countries without football heritage. How's the World Cup? It's not going to be accepted there, but it doesn't really matter. I think what we're seeing is that when you get so many fans together from so many different countries, mm-hmm. it really doesn't matter where it is. The fact that it's in Brazil, the spiritual home of football, just makes it all the better. It's just been a fantastic atmosphere from the day before the tournament started right up until now. Every day there's fans in the streets all clad in their own country's colours. You see fans from teams who aren't even here. I met a couple of guys from Nepal, Kathmandu, at the Bosnia versus Iran game. They'd just flown in just for that game. Flown all the way from Kathmandu to Salvador for one game, and they were flying back the next day.
Wow.
So the World Cup is one of those events that really captures people's imaginations and really forces them to get off their behinds and fly to wherever the tournament is taking place, just to be involved in it at some level.
You've obviously had, I guess, a little time to explore some of these cities. People know about Sao Paulo. People know a little bit about Rio de Janeiro. You know, some of the bigger, glamorous cities in Brazil. But is there one of them that kind of surprised you with its character, or a really particular interest in one of these other kind of second cities that have been hosting games?
Well, Manaus was always the one for me that was most intriguing, mm-hmm. because it's in the Amazon. It's this isolated city in the middle of like 2.5 million square miles of rainforest. So I was fascinated to go up there. And you get there, and when you fly in, you look out the window of the plane, and all you can see is like dense forest.
Ah.
Nothing at all apart from forest as far as I can see. And then as you start to descend, you see this city. When you arrive, you forget where you are entirely. It could be a city. It could be anywhere. But it also has, there's a few little hints that you're in the rainforest. I spoke to some fans who said they'd seen sloths in the trees while at the fan fest. Some of the bugs are pretty sizable. Some of the spiders, etc. But it's a fascinating place to go, and even the people who speak with a different accent, it looks slightly more indigenous. It was a very interesting place to go. I fear a little for their stadium now. They've held their games. They're essentially, for them, the World Cup's over.
Yeah.
They're just now watching it on TV from now on. So I'm a little worried about what lays in store for that stadium.
Yeah, because they don't have a top flight football team there, do they?
Exactly, no. They don't. It's a case. It's not the only one. There's a few stadiums that don't have top flight teams. Brasilia is another one.
Mm-hmm.
They spent an enormous amount of money building a stadium in Brasilia, which is the federal capital of the country. Yet they don't have a team that can attract more than maybe a few thousand fans in the stadium. It's a massive World Cup stadium. It holds about 40 or 60 thousand. I can't remember which.
Being around a lot of, especially the local populations here, have you? This kind of ties into what you were just saying. Have you noticed any of the frustration and the kind of protest sentiment that was around Brazil, certainly leading up to the tournament? I don't know if it's quieted down now that the game's been playing, but have you gotten that sense of a little bit of anger at some of the way things were handled in the run-up to this?
No, really. And for some Brazilians, it's quite disappointing, because it does seem, once the football started, the protests were forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
All the anger and disappointment about what went on in the run-up to this tournament has suddenly been forgotten, because there's some football tournament going on with, for right or wrong, is what's happened here. I think that was the key thing. When Brazil were playing Chile, they went to penalty shootout, there was so much tension in the country.
No.
I watched the game in Rio on the Copacabana with a lot of Brazilian fans, and you could feel, I'd never felt anything so tense. Every penalty, these fans were looking to the sky. They couldn't watch. Some of them left to go to the cafe because they just couldn't watch what was going on. And you felt, if Brazil had lost that game and been knocked out of their own tournament, then we would have had some pretty big issues for the rest of the tournament going forward. Whether that will still happen, if they lose to Colombia, whether that will still happen, I'm not so sure. It felt like second round against Chile, to lose on penalties, it felt as if it would have been maybe the catalyst to something pretty big.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I guess that would have been my kind of what I was wondering next. You said, you know, now they get to play Colombia, and if they win that, they're in the semifinals. But is anything less than winning the tournament in whole going to be enough for the Brazilians?
Probably not. I mean, before the tournament started, Sao Paulo, the Scolari, the coach of Brazil, said that if Brazil don't win, he'll have to emigrate to Kuwait because there's just so much expectation on him and his team. There is an acceptance from the fans that this is not a classic Brazil team. This is a team of grafters more than a team of skilled, talented, like flair players, like traditional Brazilian players. So there's an acceptance that it's not the best team, but there's also an expectation that on home soil, they have to win. This is Brazil, after all. This is the five-time champion. They have to win. There's no alternative.
Moving away from that a little bit, I guess, is there any one game that you've witnessed so far? I know you've been at quite a number of them, that sticks out in your mind from this tournament so far?
I've been to, like you said, I've been to a few, I think maybe about 10 games or something so far. And the ones that stand out are really the ones where the lesser team, the underdog, has really showed its character, showed its spirit. I mean, Algeria's game against Germany, Algeria were fantastic for 90 minutes. And they could have been leading Germany, and went to extra time, and maybe tiredness kicked in a little bit, and Germany closed as you'd expect them to do. But just to see that spirit and that belief and the determination of the Algerian players to go toe-to-toe with one of the world's biggest traditional football teams was very impressive to see. And it's a similar story with the United States. People have different opinions on the United States, how they did this year and where there's progress, that they only reached the second round in the last 16. But I never fail to be impressed by them whenever I watch them. I just always find their mental strength and their self-belief always fighting to the very last minute. It's very impressive.
You touch on one of the interesting things of this tournament there when you talk about Algeria and the U.S. a little bit, and Costa Rica, they're still in it. How, you know, with a lot of these kind of surprise teams, or it seems like more than usual, there's a lot of surprise teams at least that have had nice runs. How did the neutrals, you know, the Brazilian fans, when, you know, they were at a game like Germany, Algeria, how did you notice, I guess, them taking to the underdogs? Were they interested in these kind of Cinderella stories, or do they want to see kind of like their own team, a Germany, you know, play at its best?
I think Algeria-Germany was an interesting match in particular because of where it was held. Mm-hmm. It was held in a city called Porto Alegre, which is in the south of the country. And it's known as Gaúcho country because the people from Porto Alegre, from the state of Rio Grande do Sul, they see themselves as Gaúchos rather than as Brazilians. So at the game, whereas in previous host cities, the stadium's always filled with yellow shirts, no matter who's playing. At this game, this particular game between Algeria and Germany, the Brazilian fans weren't wearing yellow shirts. They were wearing the red shirt of the local team there, Internacional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because this kind of belief that they don't see themselves as Brazilian. So who were they rooting for? A lot of people in Porto Alegre have German heritage, so it was expected that the fans would support Germany. And at the start of the game, that was the case. With Algeria impressing so much and really pushing and trying to get a goal against Germany, the feeling in the stadium turned, and Algeria suddenly became the team with the crowd on their side, and you could see Germany were maybe feeling that a little bit. Algeria would rampage forward, and the crowd would scream and chant, and then mm-hmm. Germany would get the ball and they'd pass it around in defence, and the crowd would jeer them. So in that sense, that's, like I said, it's slightly different to most stadiums, but in that sense, the Brazilians are enjoying the underdog. I also think there's a little bit of looking out for yourself. Brazil would much rather play Algeria than they would play Germany. So in that sense, I think that looking out for their own team.
Yeah. And then just lastly here with you, while I have you for a couple more minutes, just to dip back into your personal experience a little bit to kind of get a sense of the whole tournament. What's the travel been like for you? I guess some of the food. I heard you had an experience with a baker, an American Brazilian baker or something.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. One of the things in my itinerary is I've been moving around every other day, sometimes every day. So I arrived in Porto Alegre and I had a place booked. And I got the taxi to take me there, and the place it wasn't there. The person who owns the apartment I was supposed to be staying had vacated 4 months ago and had taken the money and disappeared, basically. So at the last minute, I was desperately looking for a hotel or an apartment, and I lucked in by finding an American-Brazilian who lives with his Brazilian wife and a child, and they own a bakery two streets along from where they live. So I stayed there the night and then woke up the next morning and they put on a full banquet of pancakes and English muffins and organic coffee, and it was one of the better mornings of the experience so far.
I would imagine. Well, hey, thanks again for joining us, for taking the time to give us a call back over here in the UAE, Gary. We really appreciate your time. Again, thank you for listening, folks at home. This has been Extra Time. I am, again, Jonathan Raymond, web editor for Sport at the National. I've been joined by Gary Minahan, our reporter in Brazil. The podcast itself is produced by DT Unikrishnan and the National Multimedia Desk. You can find it on iTunes or find it on our Twitter feeds, Sport National UAE, SPRT National UAE, and NSV UAE for the multimedia Twitter feed. Thanks for listening. Bye.